welcome along. I'm delighted to say that you are very welcome to Game On. Big thanks to Darren and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It's Thursday, the 29th of May, and you're listening to Game On with Marie Crowe. John Fallon is with me in studio. John, and another Ireland squad, Hamer Hall-Grimson has named Seamus Coleman and Sammy Smodics are out. Any other big news?
No, they were sort of the two sort of updates. Andy Moran comes in, who probably would have been, you know, at the end of last year after the England game, considered someone who was going to sort of push on this year, but he's had his struggles on loan at Stoke City this year. They haven't really hit for him. They did avoid relegation, but he never really got a string of games going. So he's the main addition, but I suppose overall the squad from when it was initially announced, the main difference is compared to previous years is he's left a lot of players who would be considered regulars out to give them a break. So we're sort of very much in experimental mode, even though he probably doesn't want to use that word, but these are the last two games before the qualifiers start in September.
Okay, well, let's hear now from Hamer Hall-Grimson. He was speaking with Dave Kelly.
Hamer, first of all, just give us an update on the squad, because unfortunately no Seamus Coleman, no Sammy Smodics, but Andrew Moran is in.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we expected, announcing the squad so early, that something would happen in between. Yeah, Seamus got injured in the last game at Goodison, so yeah, he's out for some time. So unlucky me, I've kind of always missed him. He was only in my first camp for a few days. So no, he's out, and we knew Sammy was doubtful. He's coming back from injury. Is it a little bit too early for him this camp? And we decided it's better for him to sit this one out and be ready when it comes to the pre-season for Ipswich. Yeah, and we called in Andy Moran, a young player. We liked him the last time he played, came in against England in a bad loss. But he was a bright spot in that game. He wasn't with us the last camp, so he gets a chance to stake a claim in the squad this time.
Just on Caoimhín Kelleher, you know, you've spoken before about the desire for him to be playing week in, week out. Talk yesterday of Brentford showing an interest in him, and Kelleher himself has spoken even this week about his desire to be playing week in, week out. And presumably you're encouraged by that, and it does look more and more likely now that he will be leaving Liverpool in the summer and being a number one, which is what he wants.
Yeah, like I've said before, his quality deserves to be playing day in, day out, whether it's for a Premiership club or someone else. For me, it isn't the big thing, but he has proven he can play at the biggest stages in football. So, no, and all credit to him is a speculation to many clubs, meaning that he has done really good with the chances he has gotten to play, both for Liverpool and for us. So, no, hoping that he will choose wisely what he does, whether he stays or goes. I know he will take a good decision, but it's just good for us. And it shows his quality, the interest the teams have in him.
I mean, I mentioned Brentford, other clubs interested as well, but obviously if he was to go to Brentford, he'd be playing week in, week out with Nathan Collins, which perhaps would be of benefit to the national team.
Correct, yeah. If Nathan is there, you never know in the end of season what will happen before the next one, because Nathan also played really well this season. So probably clubs also interested in him. But at Brentford, we have the Icelandic national goalkeeper coach as a number two. So I know there's going to be a competition if he would go there.
Evan Ferguson, I suppose, has had a season to forget, really. The loan to West Ham hasn't worked out the way he would have hoped. From talking to him, do you sense a player low in confidence and looking for, you know, an upturn in the season ahead?
Yeah, obviously not playing affects players, but he's fit and he's sharp. But we will, of course, now need to evaluate him and give him a chance to prove a point for us. It's difficult to judge players when we don't see them play, but that's why we want to have him in our squad and see what he can give to us. And last camp, he made a difference, and we know his quality. Hopefully he will get playing time and have a good pre-season, which is really important, and come in flying in September where we need everyone fit and ready.
That was Hamer Helgrimson. We'll be also hearing from Carla Ward a little bit later on with Rebecca Cray, previewing those Women's Nations League games that are coming up. We're also going to be chatting rugby with Bernard Jackman. URC quarterfinals will be our port of call with Bernard in a little while. But back to Seamus Coleman. John, such a stalwart for Ireland and an Everton legend as well. Do you think we'll see him playing for Ireland again?
I think it's hard to call at this stage because ideally he would have came in and probably seen himself, you know, having been able to work under the manager, having missed out on previous squads. But this time, because of so much uncertainty, I know David Moyes said he wanted to keep him around, but is that in a coaching capacity? And you've got to bear in mind his age. Like, he's going to be 37 in October. Now, I know he is a special case. He looks after himself in terms of fitness, and he's that off-the-pitch influence is always mentioned. But right-back area, right-side centre-back, is probably the most competitive area of the Ireland squad. So he's looking at it, and he's got Matt Doherty, who's always his rival. Then Jacob Bryan has played there for Everton. You have Festi Obaseli. You have Darrow Shea. You have Andrew Omobamadeli. You know,
it's the one area we're stacked.
Yeah, and it's not an ego thing with Seamus. I'd say it's just pride. Does he want to come in, you know, and have three windows, September, October, November, and not be involved? And at the moment, there is no guarantee. So I'm sure there are discussions going on. Like, Hamer Helgrimson has been very coy in terms of saying we want him around, but hasn't confirmed that he's committed to being around. So in answer to your question, I don't know whether it would be competitively. I think we probably would see him in a swan song situation, but whether or not he's going to contribute to the World Cup qualifying campaign, I think, is still probably undecided.
Mm-hmm. Okay, watch that space with Seamus Coleman. Great to see Andrew Moran in, though. Brighton midfielder has been a star at underage level, stepped up a couple of times, but getting an opportunity now.
Yeah, he's someone who's very excited, and even in that horrible 5-0 defeat at Wembley last November, he was probably the one bright spark. He came on and did quite well. Again, it's just like a lot of players who are, you know, get the 21s level, it's sort of the next step is the hardest, and he was very good in that under 21 game against Italy. But just again, at club level, the championship is relentless, and managers are getting sacked and their jobs are on the line. They wouldn't necessarily go for sort of a lightly built creative number 10, but I think certainly, Hamer Helgrimson seems to rate him, and John O'Shea would obviously know him a long time. So he's one to watch in it. But you have other players in the squad then, like John Patrick Finn, and Will Smallbone is back, and Killian Phillips is uncapped. So I think you'll see sort of a new sort of sprinkling of players. I don't think it'll
I don't think I got used to the old sprinkling of players there to have a new one coming in.
Yeah, not that many. I don't think we'll have the surgery like we had under the last regime.
Okay. Senegal tomorrow week, and then Luxembourg. Two teams we don't know a huge amount about.
No, only Senegal. We probably know a lot of familiar names from playing around the Premier League. Luxembourg, we would know, unfortunately, from that famous 1-0 defeat during the COVID days at the start of Stephen Kenny's competitive era in terms of the last World Cup campaign. I think the FAI struggled to get games this time. They left it really late. Now Senegal, you know, they're in the top 20 in the world. They're a classy team, and they have everyone, I think, except Mane with them. Luxembourg will be a different story, where probably there's going to be scope for experimentation, as I mentioned earlier. But it does give them a chance just to have players in for 10 days, because once you hit September the 6th, it's six games over 10 weeks. And it's a sprint.
It's done.
It can be done in sort of three ways. You can win the group, which ideally we would, over Portugal. You get second and get a playoff, which will be next March, or else you finish third and you're out. So that's really the permutations. But it is very much quick, which means if you get a player who gets an injury, he could miss the whole lot. But if you look at the other teams like Portugal and Hungary, particularly Hungary, when you think of Szoboszlai and you know, some of their other stars that they have, you know, if they were to get an injury, it could benefit us as well. So we won't really know until the start of the club season as to what shape we're in. I think we look like we have a strong enough starting 11, but beyond that is probably the one that you'll be concerned about.
Confidence-wise, Helgrimson seems to be pretty sure that he can lead Ireland to this major tournament.
Yeah, because he's done it before with Iceland, I suppose, and he has spoken very confidently. Now, I think it's more than just being putting on a show. I think he really believes that these players are capable of doing something, because it could have been a worse group. Like the last Euros, we had France and Netherlands. So as a second seed, Hungary, although they've done quite well in the last 10 years, they've been on a bit of a slide in the last 12 months. So if you're looking to be us against them, presuming Portugal were to run away with it, it's not a bad one that you take on. So in that context, can we finish second and get a playoff? We're very capable, but I think a lot of things have to fall for us.
What about the transfer market, John? We're starting to see a lot of rumours, players, a lot of Irish players in particular as well, been linked with clubs. But there's a huge amount of interest in Caoimhín Kelleher and where he might go, mostly because he's now a Premier League winner again and he's at such a high-profile club. And it does seem to create quite a lot of debate whether or not he's better off staying at a place like Liverpool and being the understudy, well, to Alisson, or the new keeper coming in, or going out on his own. And it looks like he wants to go on his own, and Brentford could be the destination.
Yeah, I think that debate has been raging for years, but it was sort of settled last year when they brought in that keeper from Georgia, or certainly got the pre-contract in place. I think he knew where he stood then, that he wasn't the heir to Alisson.
Yeah, that's harsh, isn't it?
It is, particularly considering how highly Klopp rated him. You know, I know it sort of only happened after he left. So I think this has been cast in stone since the start of last year. It was just a case of whether he was going to go in January or now. And you heard his comments on the pitch at the, you know, the final game. So
he's ready now, he said.
He's been ready for a long time. And he's even got in and had, you know, long spells when Alisson's been injured or unavailable. And he's top class, but he's 27 in November, you know, and he hasn't been a regular at club level. Yeah. Now, I know goalkeepers have longevity and, you know, they are, again, exceptional in that case. But yeah, a move staying in the Premier League. Brentford, you know, did quite well. Nathan Collins is there, who he knows well. I think that would be a good move for him, because he will play regularly, and that's what he needs, and that's what Ireland need as well.
Yeah, that's for sure. And just in terms of moves, are you expecting any Irish players, any other Irish players to be moving on to pastures new?
Well, the big one, I think, is Evan Ferguson. You know, where does he stand? Because the loan move to West Ham just didn't do any benefit to him. I don't even think he was in the squad on the final day of the season. So I think he's got a decision to make. And like he's only 20, he's still relatively young, but he needs to go somewhere.
Relatively young, John. He's young.
He's a gossoon, really. Yeah, considering he's been around so long.
Yeah,
but it's a big decision. You know, I don't think there is an immediate future for him at Brighton. The way the manager's talking and who they've signed. So I think he's got a decision to make. And even if it's a newly promoted team coming up from the Championship or even going to the Championship, I don't think there's any shame in that, because he needs to be back playing and scoring goals.
Would you recommend Europe? Troy Parrott is doing so well there.
Yeah. If the right opportunity comes up, yeah, absolutely. Troy has flourished, you know, in the Netherlands. But then again, there's talk of Troy coming back. He could be, you know, going to Leeds, which is another club that was linked with Caoimhín Kelleher. So I saw an interview with Troy, which was very non-committal on his future in terms of, it's not my decision, it's the club's. So I think if Evan can get a club where he's appreciated, where they can sort of play, you know, that's compatible with his style, even if it is one sort of that's competing for promotion from the Championship, I think at this stage of his career, that would be ideal.
Yeah, get back confidence, scoring goals, in demand again, because it's hard to get players like him.
Well, it is. Like, you know, like 12, 18 months ago, they were talking about the next 100 million player. Like,
yeah, he's going to Man United, wasn't he?
Yeah. All sorts of wild predictions, but he just needs to, you know, get back to basics, get back to foundations, and in a system and in a team where, as I said, the best of his attributes can be capitalised on.
So there's going to be a bit more Corkness in the Cork City backroom team. David Myler, I had written down John Myler, so you'd know where my head is at when it comes to the Mylers. But David Myler, assistant coach down there.
It sort of came out of the blue. It's a great appointment. He's going to be assistant Jaron Nash. Who only has been in officially the last game last Friday was in Galway, which was unfortunately Cork City's fourth successive defeat. So he's coming straight in to work with Jaron Nash, not tomorrow night against Shelburne, but after the break against Bohemians is the first game. But yeah, the Corkness is there, either through his dad or, you know, through his own upbringing. He started off at Cork City until Roy Keane bought him for Sunderland, and then went off, you know, and played in cup finals for Hull City and made a good career until injury sort of ended his career at 30, but he'd be speaking to someone who would be like-minded there in terms of poor Gerry Nash. He was someone who had his career ended in his teens. But from speaking to Gerry Nash today, they don't really know each other that well. They've obviously never worked before. But I think given that he is relatively a rookie coach, I know he's worked at Villa and in Sweden, but he's never sort of picked a team, a senior team, to have someone of his prestige around them,
yeah,
I think is only going to help because they have a major battle ahead to stay up.
Yeah, how tricky is it going to be for them, John?
Sure, they're 10 points adrift of Watford at the moment in the relegation playoff place. So that means they have to win at least 3 more games than Watford. And Galway are a point ahead. So it's hard to see anyone else from the bunch ahead who are gonna slip down there. And in fact, Sligo are there coming up the other way as well. So whether it's automatic relegation or having to navigate the playoff, I think the second half of the season, especially considering they're probably going to lose Cathal O'Sullivan to the UK in the window, who's been their best player, I think it's going to be a difficult task.
Just a word then on Chelsea before we finish up. Their season ended in glory with the Conference League beating Betis 4-1 last night. The lads Shane and Ruby and Alan Colley were debating last week about the value of or the importance of having a parade after you win a trophy. Should Chelsea be celebrating the Conference League?
Considering they used a lot of young players and reserve players along the way, you can understand that. But you know, given Chelsea's budget and their expectations, it's probably a bit inappropriate. But
should they be in it? Like, should teams? Well,
they
from
can't.
The Premier League.
Yeah, that's the question. But they can't refuse entry. And from like I was in Stamford Bridge when they beat Shamrock Rovers that time, and you could see then they were a class above anything else that was in the Conference League. So, but they did go 1-0 down last night. Mm-hmm. You know, but the Betis were ahead and they missed a glorious chance to make it 2. Now, I don't know whether it would have mattered in the end, but these are the machinations of UEFA, who want the big clubs in all their competitions. So it's not a Chelsea problem. It's probably a hierarchical one.
Okay, John Fallon, thank you so much for coming in. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us. We have plenty more to come. We're going to be talking about those Women's Nations League games starting with the Turkey tomorrow night. We'll also be talking Gaelic football with Brendan Devaney, and Bernard Jackman is going to pop in to talk all things rugby.
RTE 2FM. This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, welcome back. Bernard Jackman has stepped into the studio. We're going to preview these URC quarterfinals. They feature 3 South African teams, 2 Scottish teams, 2 Irish teams and 1 Welsh. Is that reflective of maybe where rugby is at the moment?
Yeah, I think it is. Obviously, Irish rugby at this point only to have 2 in. And obviously, this qualifies those 2 for the Champions Cup, which means Ulster and Connacht will play in the Challenge Cup next year. Leinster top seeds, and we're kind of assured of that with 3 or 4 rounds to go. And Munster had to do it the hard way on the last round, beating Benetton at home. But I think they will fancy their chances going out to the Sharks. They've obviously won knockout games in South Africa. They've won URC regular season games in South Africa, and they tend to tour well. So if they can replicate that knockout game against La Rochelle earlier on in the last round of 16 Champions Cup, they'd be bang there with a chance to win.
What's concerning you about it, though?
The Sharks, just overall X factor and talent. The Sharks, to be fair, should be the best South African team based on the amount of Springbok internationals they currently have and have played for the Springboks. But this season, they've been really consistent. Certainly the Bulls are the best South African team based on the league in general. But you always fear with the Sharks that, you know, knockout rugby, the chance of silver. They won a Challenge Cup 2 years ago and we thought that would be the making of them. But they were still unbelievably inconsistent, but they can put it together on any given day. And if they did click, it would be hard to see Munster being able to live with them. But I think Munster will go down there without any fear at all.
You mentioned that they travel well. They can be dangerous away from home. What is it about the going to South Africa that seems to nearly makes them go up a gear?
Yeah, I remember speaking to Don Lennon, and he's toured down there with them, and he's seen other Irish teams down there, and he just said they just seem to like be like an old-fashioned touring side, you know, that old old amateur ethos, just having a bit of crack and messing and just enjoying each other's company and seeing it. Like, we have to remember as well, they have, you know, obviously people coming living in Cork, training in Limerick, etc. So that travel can add to a little bit of fatigue as well for the fellas who haven't moved to Limerick. So just getting away, obviously, just as importantly, I mean, it's Conor Murray and Peter Manny's, Stephen Archer's last couple of games or last three games for Munster if they go all the way to the final, and that'll be on their minds as well. And I've noticed, as I've covered their last two rounds live, I've noticed a unity there that maybe wasn't always there this season. There seems to be a real sense of collective purpose, focus, to try and make sure, first of all, that they got into Europe, and they've done that now, but I think they'll want to try and lift silverware again. Like, let's not forget, earlier on this year, it was post South African tour where Graham Rowntree left, and you know, that was a difficult thing to go through mid-season or the start of the season, and they've got over that now, and now the last two games in particular, their second half performances in both against Ulster and Benetton, there was a real sign of maturity there. And obviously they have that memory of a big scalp in La Rochelle, which isn't that long ago as well, so they will fancy their chances in a knockout game of being as good as anybody.
You mentioned lifting silverware, and not to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but do you think that if they get over the Sharks that there is potential there for them to go all the way?
Yeah, I think this would be a big boost for them. Obviously, they'd have to stay in South Africa for another week and play the Bulls if the Bulls get through. Again, they wouldn't shy away from that. Mm. You know, they'd see
they're
that
there anyway.
They're there anyway, exactly. Yeah. So the travel part of it's done.
And they're adapted.
Yeah. And they had a narrow defeat to the Bulls in Thomond only about 5 or 6 weeks ago. So, yeah, I think the thing with them is they've got two halfbacks at the moment who are playing very well, mm-hmm. Casey and Crowley. They've got an outstanding centre in Tom Farrell. They've got the likes of John Klein back. They've got a very much more positive injury profile than they had it during most of the season. So there is reasons to think that they could do something special.
Okay, well, that's good for Munster fans then anyway, especially ones that are going all the way down. They might have to stay for another week as well. They're probably planning for that anyway. Leinster and Scarlets, okay, while that Sharks-Munster game maybe isn't as straightforward for Munster, the Leinster-Scarlets game is touted as being a pretty easy scalp for Leinster to take. Would you agree?
To be honest, I've lost a lot of faith in Leinster in knockout rugby. Theoretically, this is obviously the fixture you would expect to get if you finish top and you play the 8 team, which are the Scarlets. I mean, the problem for the Scarlets is the Scarlets beat Leinster, a second string Leinster team, about a month ago, and then went to South Africa and had two good performances. Didn't win, but got enough points to get into the top 8. But the last day of the season, when they were playing the Sharks, basically it was leaked that the Welsh Rugby Union were going to cut a team, and effectively Cardiff and the Dragons have signed up to the agreement, which locks them in, that gives them security. So effectively one of the Ospreys or Scarlets are probably going to be cut in the next year or two. There may be a merger, and that can either galvanise a team or can destroy them. We haven't seen them play since. They obviously had to travel back with that news in the background and talk to families and look at mortgages and contracts and all that stuff. So have they been distracted enough to make it even harder for them to beat Leinster, or can they come like the Saints did, Northampton, with a really smart game plan, with a real belief that you can rattle Leinster? And like, look at you know, I thought Northampton released some insights into what they were saying in the lead up to the match, post the match, and it was very clear that they got belief from the fact that Leinster haven't been able to win trophies, and that they're vulnerable and get in front of them, and they're not as focused as Northampton were, etc., etc. And whether that's true or not, it doesn't matter. It's your given teams added belief because you haven't been able to get over the line, and now Leinster, until they start doing that consistently, you're going to have that in the mindset of everyone they play.
Well, they do have an opportunity being in the quarterfinal of the ORC and having that trophy not that far away. Let's hear now from Leinster player Ronan Kelleher speaking to Michael Corcoran.
How will you approach the game this weekend, kind of as a squad, in terms of even from a mental point of view, given, I know you can't undo the past, but you've got to almost kind of reset and refocus?
Yeah, there's an excitement in the group, like there's a trophy to be won. Obviously, I haven't won this in, obviously haven't won the competition as it is now, as it has been the last couple of years. And last time we won the Pro 15 was 2021, during that COVID year. So we haven't given really much for our fans to cheer about really in a good while. So we're obviously really raring to go and trying to do a job in this competition.
In terms of your opponents, I mean, they're kind of tricky enough at the best of times, but given the fact that they finished kind of well down the ladder in eighth place. This is almost like a free throw of the dice, which makes them even more dangerous.
We obviously know how good a team they are. They obviously rolled us over there a couple of weeks ago and they executed their game plan really well that day. Their front row is very good. They have powerful back five in the scrum as well. Like, then obviously they have experience in their backs and some good players throughout. So we know how good they are, and it's about us implementing our game plan.
How important is it for this group of players to finish off the season strongly and leave that Leinster jersey hanging up in a good place when you do hang it up?
Yeah, it's very, very important. Obviously, we've had a bit of a sour taste in our mouth the last couple of years, really, like, because we haven't gotten over the line in any competition. So it's about, I suppose, putting, I know I've said it before, but putting our best foot forward, but also getting the lads who are leaving or the lads that are moving on, giving them an opportunity to have their final day out in the jersey and for them to be able to share it with their friends and family and obviously the rest of us as well. So it's kind of a big focus for us all.
I would imagine it's a pretty exciting time for you. I mean, I probably should have congratulated you at the beginning in terms of the Lions, but that's something, I mean, that doesn't come around that often. I know you were involved last time out sort of on the periphery, for want of a better phrase, but yeah. to be involved in the squad this time, it must be a really special feeling.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely brilliant. It was amazing. The moment, really, I suppose, when my name was selected, was absolutely delighted. Family was delighted as well. But yeah, I think getting selected is one thing. It's about actually, I suppose, going down there and doing a job then is the next. And obviously, in the meantime, we obviously have our own aspirations as a club and as a team, and that's kind of very much so your focus now. It's very much at the here and now and what's in front of your face.
Ronan Gallagher there, he's saying all the right things, definitely, Bernard, but there is a bit of pressure on them now to deliver, isn't there?
Yeah, and worryingly, like, the obviously the first game back from Saints, they blew Zebra away, but Zebra had gone on holidays and put in a terrible effort. But last weekend, Glasgow came with not a huge amount to play for and really took Leinster out of their stride, and Leinster looked like an average team. And you would have thought that, you know, the defeat, the disappointment of the Saints loss would have been still fresh in their minds 2 weeks later, and they would have been looking to go out and put on a big display. So definitely you would hope this week that there is that reaction, there is that clinical performance that they're going to need to start to show to win silverware. And even if they do win silverware, I still think it's a season where the vast majority of Leinster fans and players will be disappointed, and that's the reality of it. Like, I know that they've no divine right to win anything, but they were like, this was a year where they had so much in their favour. Obviously, you know, home semi-final against a team quite low ranked in Northampton, who haven't got the budget in any way compared to Leinster, and the fact is, you can't ignore that 3 days later Andy Farrell picks 12 of them to be British and Irish Lions. Then you have R.G. Snyman, Geordie Barrett, I know he doesn't pick to start, and Rabbi Slimani, plus Sam Prendergast, Robbie Henshaw, who were probably going to be Lions if they won. So you have 16, 17 top quality players in that squad, and they couldn't win. And that's pretty damning. I mean, you know, Bordeaux have 4 or 5 top-end players. Northampton have 4 or 5 top-end players. And Leinster have a team full of them.
You'd imagine still, though, when they're heading into this game with everything that's happened, there'll be no mistakes made with team selection this time.
If they don't go full strength and they're to slip up, I don't know how you could justify that. They're still going to, it's going to take a long time for people to forget or accept what happened against the Saints in terms of selection. But I'd imagine the best players fit. But then you have fellas like Furlong who has an injury, and yeah, you have a lot of these fellas potentially thinking about the Lions tour. Yeah. You know, and this issue for this current Leinster group are the most talented Leinster group of all time. But I think the Joe Schmidt group in 2012, 13, 14, that era, obviously are the best Leinster team because they have the trophies to show for it. And it's really important that this group start to capitalise on their talent, or else they'll obviously have had good careers with Ireland, but they'll look back on their careers with Leinster with regret, I think.
So if you were to pick the semi-finalists, Sharks, Munster, Leinster, Scarlets, Glasgow Warriors, Stormers, Bulls, Edinburgh, who'll be contesting them?
I think Bulls, Glasgow, Leinster, Munster.
Okay. Bernard Jackman, as always, thank you so much for coming in and all of that insight. We're going to take another quick break and then we'll be joined by Rebecca Cray. She's going to start looking ahead to those really important Women's Nations League games that are coming up over the next few days.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, Rebecca Cray has walked into a studio. We're going to look ahead to the Republic of Ireland's women's teams to Nations League games. First up is Turkey, followed by Slovenia on Tuesday down in Cork. So Carla Ward's side do need to remain unbeaten in those games, and should tabletopper Slovenia also win this week, then her side will need to overcome a 4-goal deficit down in Cork to clinch that automatic promotion and avoid a very complicated playoff later this year. So basically she just needs to keep winning these games, Rebecca Cray.
Basically, yeah. She seems to have found her feet a little bit more, you mm-hmm. know, judging off the previous camp compared to the first time in. And look, it's just about going out aggressive again and you know, starting on the front foot, and hopefully the girls can pull through tomorrow and Tuesday.
Yeah, you know now that from watching them that there's been quite a lot learned from those opening couple of games. I think it was a bit of a baptism of fire for Carla Ward. What does she need to have been working on in this latest camp to, I suppose, just see her stamp a little bit more in this team?
Yeah, I think obviously it's hard coming in to, you know, a new group of players and, you know, brand new staff and trying to implement your way of playing. I think judging off the last camp, you know, watching the girls playing, they were a lot more, I suppose, aggressive in the way they started the game against Greece. You know, they went out there and, you know, really, really attacking, and I think they were trying to play out from the back a lot more as well, which is something that I think she's implemented really well. So look, hopefully be a bit more of the same, you know, coming off the result against Turkey in February. It was a 1-0 win. You know, I think the girls will be going out and trying to get a few more goals on the board.
Yeah, big time. Good news though from Carla Ward today. Katie McCabe is fit and ready to play against Turkey. She, of course, was in the thick of Arsenal's Champions League triumph on the pitch and off the pitch as well. She seemed to lead those celebrations, and I don't think anyone will begrudge her. She's been such a great servant to football, both in Ireland and for Arsenal as well. But it must be hard for her to get up again, because, you know, that's what happens when you're at that level. You have to kind of bring yourself down and enjoy the moments and then get back up again a few days later.
Yeah, most definitely. Look, I'd say Katie's still riding that wave. You know, she's on a high for about 5 days straight, and I'd like to test her bloods at this stage to see what levels her alcohol levels are at. But no, listen, she was fantastic in that game, and obviously, you know, massive congratulations to herself and Arsenal. But look, you know, I think Carla has mentioned in reports today and yesterday, she's a professional, you know, and she came into that camp with her head screwed on, I'm sure, ready to play for her country. And, you know, she'll obviously has enjoyed the last week or so, but I'm sure her full focus will be to get fit. And, you know, I know she had a bit of a calf injury over the last little while, and something she's been maintaining, but I know she'll be going on to that training pitch in the last 2 days or so, you know, with full focus on Friday's game and next Tuesday as well.
Yeah, no better woman to turn it on the big day. Let's hear a little bit now from the Ireland manager, Carla Ward. She spoke with Tony O'Donoghue today.
Carly, you've had a few days to acclimatise, I guess, and prepare. How has it been so far for you in Istanbul?
Yeah, it's been a good camp. It's been good to get the girls back together, because it's been probably a longer period this time compared to between camp one and two, but it's been good. Today will be good because it's the first time we've got the whole group together. So, it's been a positive week.
Katie McCabe, the captain, has come back, and of course we saw that she was welcomed by the group. How was that?
Do you know what? It was unbelievable. Yeah, we all knew what we were. We all knew as soon as... As soon as they won that game, I think the talk was, how do we welcome her back? And safe to say, she was pleased, and really positive sort of evening when she came in. So, yeah, delighted to have her back, and unbelievably proud of what she's achieved. And I think, if you remember, I called it right, and I just had a feeling they were going to do it. And they were sensational. So, yeah, delighted that we now have another Champions League winner here.
And how would you describe her contribution to the game?
She was unbelievable. You know, I thought they all were. I think tactically they got the game plan right. I think Katie's Katie, and you know what you're going to get. She's wholehearted, she's front-footed, she's tenacious, she gives you everything. And I think that, you know, her overall performance was outstanding, but credit to Rene, the team, and yeah, all of them involved, because it was some achievement, it really is.
Well, she certainly celebrated in style as well. how ready will she be for a game on Friday? And have you got to put that into your thinking in terms of fitness and availability?
Yeah, listen, Katie's a pro, and you never want anyone to not celebrate such a massive, massive win and an important moment in her career. So, you know, it was about her enjoying those celebrations. But she's a professional, she's fit, she's ready. Maybe a question mark on her calf at the moment, you know, towards the end of that final. But look, she said to me straight away, I'm ready, I want to play. So, yeah, of course, she's available for selection.
If she doesn't make it, what is plan B?
Can't tell you that, can I? Listen, we've played a game without her. We've played 45 without her again in against Greece. So we have players that can play, for sure. And we have a squad, and that's what the squad's there for. The squad's full of quality, full of experience. So, yeah, there's no doubt that we can make some changes if we had to.
When you look at the performance against Turkey in the home leg, and you've obviously watched their game since, I mean, how difficult will it be to play them on their home turf?
Yeah, listen, I think that first game, you know, we've looked at it, and whilst we had a lot of the ball, I think I said to you after the game, we didn't do enough with it. Since then, we have. We've increased a lot of the numbers we wanted to. The team are starting to grow. I think that was the first game that new group, new management, lots of contributing factors. But look, we've got here a glorious pitch for starter. But Turkey are a good side, and Turkey know that if they beat us and beat Greece, then they can finish second. So let's be really clear, this is a must-win game. We have to go and get 3 points. We have to make sure that we're switched on, we're focused, and we get the job done.
Carla Ward there speaking to Tony O'Donoghue. She sounds quite positive about Katie McCabe, which is really good to hear. We need players like her, because there has been a bit of a void when it comes to leadership, and that's something that everybody has in the camp has spoken quite a lot about, because so many big players retired all at the same time, which is difficult. One that we thought was gone but is back is Louise Quinn. She's going to be in the squad. She is in the squad. She's got 121 caps. She's at that 16-year career. She says she's here to play, and whether she does or not, we will find that out over the next few days. But just from a leadership perspective, how important is it for the team to have somebody like Louise around?
Yeah, massively important. I think even just her presence around the camp, you know, over the course of the week, and having her in the dressing room before those games and during the games, you know, on the sideline, if it is a case she obviously doesn't play, will be massive for the girls. You know, she's been through it all over the last 15 years or so, internationally, and look, having the likes of herself, obviously Denise, the Katies, all those kind of players, Ruta, Little John obviously back in as well, and you still have obviously, you know, Courtney Brosnan. You know, she's a little bit younger, but she's that leader from the back, and something that they were missing for a few years, you know. But it will be great obviously to have Louise in, and you know, give her that bit of, I suppose, recognition as well, given the mm-hmm. tenure she's had, you know. And I'm obviously pretty sure this will be our last camp, so hopefully she gets a nice send off with 2 wins.
Yeah, and we were speaking about Seamus Coleman a little bit earlier on with John Fallon as well, and it's quite a similar situation. Although when it comes to Louise, I wouldn't be surprised if we see her for the USA games as well. No, Louise now.
Never know.
You'd never know. But just in terms of what we're seeing under Carla, and I think that's the big question, are we seeing that kind of development, that style of play that the girls seem to have been able to adapt to? Are they comfortable with what they've been asked to do, do you think?
I think so. You know, like, judging off the experiences that the girls have had in previous camps, there's such a togetherness with them. They've invested a lot in what the coaches are telling them. You know, there seems to be a good vibe around the camp, and, you know, as I said, look, that kind of playing out from the back, a little bit more comfortable on the ball now as well, instead of this, you know, just route one kind of football that we've been used to seeing. You know, we were always quite defensively sound, you know, we've got a few goals off set pieces as well. Mm-hmm. All those kind of things come into these kind of games when it's tight. You know, just getting those little nicks and little goals in around the 6-yard box are massive for us. And, you know, obviously you have a few players that are out, a few more coming in, you know, Leanne Kernan obviously out injured, Heather Payne as well, and the likes of Erin Healy getting a call up. You know, it'll be interesting to see if she gets some game time coming off, you know, the Australian leagues, 8 goals out there, player of the year with Adelaide United. So yeah, there's a lot of kind of freshness about the team. They seem to be confident in the way they're playing, and that comes from the staff, obviously, you know, instilling that confidence in the girls to go out and play.
Yeah, and look, we do get quite a lot of goals from set pieces, which is I think when you look at Louise Quinn's goal scoring record as well, I think she's up there as the third most goals for Ireland, that it is kind of part and parcel of what Ireland offer. But getting a few more goals from open play is going to be crucial, especially if you want to close the gap on Slovenia's goal difference.
100%. You know, obviously we've had Kyra Caruso has stepped up to the mark. You know, obviously you've Amber Barrett as well coming off the back of a Belgian Cup win, so she'll be on a high. Mm-hmm. You know, you've, as I said previous, you know, we've multiple experienced players, even in, you know, Megan Campbell. That long throw can be you know,
underused, I think.
Yeah, most definitely. But you know, even her coming off the back of the league win with London City Lionesses, you've got a lot of players coming in there, you know, on a bit of a high, and hopefully they can carry that confidence from domestic leagues into this game. And you know, work it through the middle. You know, it's something that I suppose, as you said previously, you know, we've been very much a kind of, you know, get the ball up top as quick as possible. But just bringing those players like Denise in, you know, Rusha, get them on the ball, and obviously Katie as well if she does play. But, you know, a lot more goals from open play will be something that we'll be looking for, most definitely.
The slow starts that we've seen though under Carla are a bit of a worry, and especially when, as Carla said there, Turkey know that they need the result as well.
Yeah.
How important is it going to be for this team to start a bit quicker, and how do you make them do it?
Yeah, look, as I said, you know, people can look at it as starting slow. You know, you have to be patient in these kind of games. There's such a you know, a difference from playing domestically. It's so structured, and you're playing a game of chess nearly against teams, you know, and obviously Turkey have that incentive to go out and finish second if they get two wins in the next two games, and they're going to be very, very hard to break down, you know, especially playing them at home. Again, as I said, just being aggressive from the get-go. I think in that game against Greece, I saw a little bit of a, you know, a little bit more of a, I suppose, positive mindset from, you know, minute one, and it did die down briefly. But, you know, they have to go out and just go and be positive, you know, about it. Get the midfielders, get the playmakers on the ball, and try and work something up to the top, and obviously hopefully get the win.
Ireland are 32 places ahead of Turkey, though, or Turkey, as we now call them. They should be easing to results in these games, and we should be coming away from it thinking, right, that's a pretty good performance as well. But it's not always the case, Rebecca.
No, never. You know, like these kind of games, you know, performances can go out the window. You know, it's all about results, and that's what it's going to boil down to, you know. And look, it's about finding a way to win. As I said, look, the staff will go in, I'm sure, really well prepared in the next, or this week, and they'll be trying to bring that onto the training pitch in the last 2 days or so to bring that onto to Friday's game. And I think they won't be looking beyond tomorrow, you know, go out, try and get the result that we need, and look, we look to Tuesday after that. Obviously Slovenia, very, very tough side, you know, beat us 4-0 in the last game. They've got 4 wins from 4 as well. So look, it's a case of just taking it game by game, and look, hopefully that, you know, we can go out and do the business then.
Jessie Stapleton seems to kind of have solidified her spot now in the defence, even though she's someone that's been around for quite a long time. Mm. She still has so much potential, doesn't she?
So much. I don't think we've even seen half of it, to be honest. And I think, you know, her going out on loan as well to Sunderland was probably the best thing that she's done. I had conversations with her there only last week, and she came home and, you know, she said she had the best year ever, I suppose. I think when you go over to England, you're always, you know, expecting to go straight in and, you know, state your case. And I suppose at West Ham, it's hard because you've got so many, you know, players out there that are, you know, well established, and she's a young girl going across from the Irish leagues, and I think Sunderland has helped her grow. And you kind of relate that back to Katie McCabe when she left Arsenal, you know, in her first year or two, and went to Glasgow on loan. Mm-hmm. You know, she just excelled after that, and I think, you know, looking at Jessie in the last two games, she's got that air of confidence about her. She's, you know, going into to camp, I'm sure, you know, well prepared and up for this one. And yeah, she's definitely kind of stated her case for that back line.
Yeah, and we kind of needed somebody as well when you're seeing Diane Caldwell out the door.
Yeah.
Niamh Fahey. Mm. Louise is coming to the end. She's not quite there yet, but we needed somebody to step up.
We do, you know, and Stapo has done that, you know, and the likes of Anna Patton even, and, you know, and Aoife Mannion, who's kind of, I suppose, the more experienced at the back there as well. And you still have, obviously, the likes of Megan Campbell in the mix. But, you know, we've got a good group there at the back, on the back line, and I suppose that has been our foundation for a long time. And, you know, the likes of Caitlin Hayes as well, she kind of done well under the you know, the previous tenure as well. So look, we've got a wide range and wide range of selection, I should say, to pick from.
Okay, Rebecca, lots to look forward to. That game will be here on 2FM tomorrow evening as well, so do tune in for that. Thank you so much for coming in. We're turning our attention now to Gaelic football. We won't get to do our previews tomorrow, so Brendan Devaney has joined us right now to look ahead to the weekend's game. Brendan, how are you?
Yes, what's it, Craig? The weekend starts here. Thursday is the time to start the weekend. If my boss is not listening, this is what I do every week, to be honest.
Now, I said weekend's game, but what I meant is games. Although I was thinking about, there's so many of them, but it was Armagh and Dublin is the one that's really in my mind, just because I think the games that they've played of late have just been absolute crackers. But there's just so much to wonder about these teams as well, Armagh and Dublin, and just that I suppose the resurgence in Dublin and Armagh trying to hang on to their title. What's impressed you most about Armagh this year?
Yeah, I think probably the reset again, no more than last year. I think it'd be an easy team talk for Kieran McGinney because even though they lost the Ulster Championship again, you can tell they're going in after what they did last year. Say, this is our competition. We're the champions. Of course, Dublin, the champions of the year before. Mm-hmm. And strange enough, Marie, compared with previous years, whoever were the champions, they were the team to beat. I don't think that's the case now. And that's no disrespect to Armagh. But certainly, they weren't expected to win the title, and Dublin with all their changes now. So even though they're the last two teams to win all Ireland, they're still very much in the pack. But I think the big thing with us, Marie, is Croke Park. We're looking at seeing, particularly with an Ulster team there, how does that 11 around the arc, how does that defensive shape work in Croke Park? Dublin are going to come at Armagh. Can you do a version of your blanket defence? A lot of people think you can't, and Dublin is the team to test them out, particularly after a brilliant one against Galway. So it's set up, Marie, I think, for a really fascinating game of two contrasting styles. Armagh, you know, they have pace on the break, but they, by and large, like to work it up the pitch slow. Dublin like to come with you full throttle.
Yeah, and Armagh have such a wide range of scorers. It's quite interesting, actually, because when you look at Dublin and what they've offered in years gone by, they had so many threats up top. But without Conor Callaghan, he hasn't fully recovered yet. He could be back. But it's strange that you're kind of wondering, where, when we see other teams, where are all the scorers that Dublin are going to need going to come from, do you think, Brendan?
Yeah, well, I suppose that Bugler man has been back the last day. Certainly after his league performances were massive. You know, I suppose, you know, is Paddy Small okay again? Conn's a massive one, you know. Mm-hmm. Basgale was brilliant the last day but didn't contribute a lot. I suppose Kieran Kilkenny was absolutely immense. Yeah. But Basgale's work rate in going after the Galway defence and when they let it short, they go on after them, you know. And obviously Larkin O'Dell played well, you know, Kovic Byrne. You know, I think it was one of those games where he kind of came of age a bit. And of course, Lahiff wins the last kick out from Cluxton under pressure. I mean, the calmness of Cluxton. And then he ends up in the back of the move. They hold the ball until the hooter. So listen, we're so quick, I think, because there's so much happening now, Marie, to kind of write off teams. As we keep seeing, there's surprise games and performances and victories coming out everywhere. So there's much more of a levelling off with all the teams there. And going into this game, it's a 50-50, but after Armagh's exploits at Croke Park last year, winning the three games, after losing so many big games there, they're going to come down. And you mentioned scores. I mean, the form of Oisin Conor, I mean, he's had 10 points from play the last two games. How do you stop him? That might be as big as an issue for anything in terms of the brilliance that he has. Armagh have plenty of pace, breaking up the pitch, and with Rian O'Neill back as well, now he's at his game under his belt. He's just come from nowhere. He's like a new player nearly back in there, Marie. And were we going to see some of the 2-point brilliance from him? A lot of things for Dublin to contend with, because I think Armagh certainly have the better squad. Whether team on team, if Conn's out, you'd have to say it's certainly advantage Armagh.
Derry and Galway is another fascinating as well, one as well, because whoever loses here, they could be looking at elimination. And when you think about Galway and the conversations that everybody's had about them heading into this championship, it's quite hard to believe. But do you think that Derry have it in them to take the scalp?
I mean, do you know what? It's been such a tough time for them, and we all know about their woes in the league, but they competed in a lot of games. They competed nearly in every match they've been playing, and they just haven't seemed to have enough. Now, that said, they're playing Armagh, and Armagh, you know, that obviously was going to be a difficult game. Armagh went 13 points up, but then you've seen the fight back. So you've got to say, and I think the players are playing for Paddy Tilley. You know, we had great performances in there from the likes of Ethan Doherty, which you maybe didn't see enough of. Can we get a bit more from McGuigan? You still have Glass, you know, you have Rogers, you have so much talent in there that this is a dodgy enough game, I think, because, you know, you look at it now from Galway, they didn't look really on it against Dublin, and the way Dublin really hammered them on the kick out and that. So this is a dicey game, particularly after both teams losing. And I suppose the bit of jeopardy we're looking for, me, we've had to kind of realise that as we go into this All-Ireland series, we're looking for kind of championship games. We can't get do or die until it is do or die. But for teams that have lost their first game, it came more or less as back to the wall. So I think you might see the best of Derry coming out there. And if we can get what we've seen of Derry for 15, 20 minutes in the first half and the finish of that game, then they can put it right up to Galway. But Galway love playing Derry, as they do most northern teams, and have beaten them the last five times. So you just think they might be a bit more balanced, but still got their own issues up front. Mm-hmm. Still, we keep every game we talk about Walsh and Comer. You know, what are we going to get from Walsh? Is Comer injured?
And that's the big thing. Yeah.
That's it. Now, young Thompson has been brilliant. You know, obviously Tierney Finnerty, and they've got so much coming from deep. They've so much power out around midfield. You know, so Conroy, didn't have the best of games, looked a bit tired against Dublin the last day. So, you know, if the likes of Maher and Daly and these guys can do the hard running in the midfield and release him as well, it'll be a massive side. Lackey and Darcy coming in as well to help out. So the power that Galway maybe have against the two big men of Derry might be enough. Kick out a game is the absolute key.
Okay, we're nearly out of time, but just a quick word on Tyrone and Mayo. Tyrone, who have now joined the conversation as All-Ireland contenders. How's that one going to go?
Yeah, certainly, as you say, Marie, because they beat our boys in their own backyard. So we're waiting for this wee sprinkling of Malachy Roard kind of angel dust that he would put it out there and go, this is what happens, because Malachy Roard's teams always play well. Of course, you're talking about backs to the wall. Mayo's backs to the wall now. You know, obviously, Kevin McStay, we wish him all the best. What is Rachel going to do? They have a couple of under-20s and Paddy Durkin's back. Every time we write off Mayo, Marie, this is when they pull out performance. But listen, they're away from home. Great balance. Tyrone looked really good last week. If Dara Canavan clicks, they're in serious bother because McCurry is flying. Mm-hmm. They've got a great balance throughout the rest of the team and they have enough players to stop this Mayo side. Now, if Mayo play anything like Cavan, they'll get absolutely destroyed. So listen, this is all about Mayo. They need to come with that passion, the same as they did with Galway in the Connacht final, or they will get taken apart.
Okay, Brendan Devaney, a pleasure as always, a day early on a Thursday. Thanks, as well. Enjoyed that. We will be talking to you again next week. So even though Jeff Shepherd won't be with us on the show today, he asked that we pass along a message. So his boss, Meg, is in Ireland this week for her cousin's wedding down in Portlaoise this Saturday. I'd say Shep would love to be at it. So to the bride and groom, Anna, Claire and Manny, have a great wedding and an even greater marriage. Meanwhile, here on 2FM, the new music show with Bette Da Silva is up next. And a reminder that tomorrow we've live commentary of Turkey versus the Republic of Ireland in the Nations League. Join Shane on air live here on 2FM just before 6.
This is 2FM.